under advisement. We'll move to the next case of the morning, which is number 02-1863, Greenfield Mills Incorporated against Larry Macklin. Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Eric Lewis. I represent the plaintiff appellants in this matter. I have agreed to address the Clean Water Act issues in my portion of the oral argument. On May 18th of 1998, two Indiana DNR employees who were in control of the Orland Dam and the Orland Reservoir at Orland, Indiana, did something that, as far as the record is concerned, had never been done before. They pulled pulled one or more of the lower gates of that old dam structure, and they drained the entire reservoir through the lower dam gates, an 8 foot or better head wall of water, and they let this process go on from approximately 8:30 in the morning until approximately 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The undisputed result of that was the hydraulic excavating from that ancient reservoir of 100,000 cubic yards of buried sediment into what is agreed to be perhaps the finest remaining wild stretch of river in northern Indiana. This was done with no notice to the public, no notice to the landowners downstream, no opportunity for hearing, no permits of any kind, state or federal, no notice to or involvement of the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, Department of Engineering, or the Water Division, not even notice to the two district biologists who work out of that same facility.
Did the DNR or the state indicate that they did not believe it caused the damage to the stream?
They indicated that in their pleadings and in their briefs. There's no factual support for that allegation, Your Honor.
They alleged that it did not cause damage, is what
they alleged it. What we say very vigorously in our briefs and here is they never proved it, and they never even put in any piece of competent evidence that would dispute the Indiana University studies and reports that we filed with the district court.
How about any photographs of their own?
The defendants put in no photographic evidence in this record. The defendants put in no lay evidence in this record of the condition of the river before or after the event of May 18, 1998, or what has happened to the freshwater lake at Greenfield Mills approximately 5 miles downstream. This lawsuit was filed on May 15th of the year 2000. The district court granted summary judgment on all counts in favor of all defendants on March 12th of this year. Most of our clients are elderly. Two of them have died pending this appeal. There are several rules of construction that apply here. One is that summary judgment may be granted only if there are no genuine issues of fact. The other is that under the Clean Water Act, it is the plaintiff's burden to prove that the elements of the violation are present. But it is the defendant's burden to prove every part of the maintenance exemption if it wants to claim it. It is the defendant's burden to prove every part of the recapture clause and that they did not violate that as well.
Mr. Lewis, I think it would be very helpful if you could delineate with some precision exactly where you disagree with the district court on matters of law as opposed to matters of fact.
I'd be happy to.
One of the difficulties I had, I know, in studying your case was differentiating between matters of law and matters of fact.
I'd be happy to, Your Honor. The first error of law the district court made was in its interpretation of the maintenance exemption. All of the courts that have talked about the maintenance exemption and have coordinated it with the recapture provision have said that exemption must be construed narrowly. The district court had a choice of construing it narrowly or broadly in this case. We said to the district court, it is the discharge of the dredge material itself which the defendant must prove was for the purpose of dam maintenance. In this case, the defendants have never claimed that the discharge of the sediment was for any purpose or any reason. They have always claimed it was unintended, it was an accident. The only thing they ever claimed they intended to discharge was the water in the reservoir. And we argued that strenuously. We argue it again here. If you construe the exemption narrowly, you must use the language there. There are other exemptions in 1344F. There are five or six of them, as I recall. Two of them, Congress used the language from or resulting from. In the dam maintenance exemption, Congress said, you must prove the discharge of the dredge materials was for the purpose of dam maintenance. Here it was not. Defendants have never claimed that it was. It was wholly unnecessary.
Do they don't make any allegation that the floodgates or whatever the gates were needed to be repaired?
They did make that allegation, and that's a red herring in this case. The district court seemed to confuse it at times. There's no reason for that confusion. It's clear in the record. The two DNR employees had, months before, had the dam gates inspected. They had, through formal channels, through the bureaucracy, sought budgeting approval for the yet unscheduled future repairs of the flow control gates. This was not even scheduled yet. They had requested that it be done. They knew the I-beams had to be welded. They were rotten. I agree. This wasn't even scheduled yet. And this is why Department of Engineering, Division of Water, weren't even present on May 18, 1998. They didn't even know this was going to happen. No one knew but Mr. Clary and Mr. Meyer. So, yes, Your Honor, there's no dispute. The dam gates needed to be repaired. And my clients, as much as anybody, wanted them to be repaired because there was a risk of dam failure and cataclysmic problems to the river, which, ironically, were intentionally caused on May 18, 1998, the result no different than if the dam had failed. The legal error of the district court on the exemption clause. The district court specifically decided, I hold that merely resulting from dam maintenance is good enough. The only authority the district court hung its hat on for that ruling and that broad interpretation, rather than the narrow interpretation the courts and Congress have indicated should be applied, was a regulation. I believe it's cited at page 20 or 22 of the court's opinion. That regulation was never cited, it was never argued, it was never raised by the defendants in the summary judgment proceeding below. It came as a complete surprise to us. We had no opportunity to respond to it. That is the only authority, legal authority, that we can find that the district court relied on in choosing a broad interpretation of the maintenance exemption in the first instance. We say that flies in the face of the purpose of the statute to restore and maintain the integrity of the nation's waters. It flies in the purpose of a rich congressional record about Congress's intent in writing both the maintenance exemption and the later recapture amendment. It flies in the face of any applicable precedent. The next legal error, Judge Ripple, fundamentally, we say, was the district court's interpretation of the recapture provision. Ironically, the district court said, here, I'm going to adopt what it called a, quote, literal interpretation of the recapture provision. The court had rejected a literal interpretation of the maintenance exemption, thereby giving the defendants the exemption. The court now moved to the recapture provision, the purpose of it is very clear in the congressional record and in case precedent. And the district court, with, we say, no reason, chose deliberately to adopt a narrow construction. Here, the district court was supposed to use a broad construction. The district court said, this is the literal reading, and this is the only literal reading. I said, and I say now, that is a run-on sentence. That's the best I can say about it. I don't have a PhD in grammar, but I say a fair-minded person, lawyer or not, can read that provision in two different ways. He can read it as conjunctive or disjunctive. If you prove that their purpose was to bring about a change in use, that triggers the recapture clause. Alternatively, if you prove that what they did caused an alteration or reduction in the flow, circulation, or reach of the waters of the United States, that triggers the recapture clause. The district court specifically said, if you don't prove that the defendants intended to bring about a change in use, all this evidence of damage, all the Indiana University report, all the other evidence of how much damage this caused are irrelevant. That's precisely what the district court said. I don't care about all that, because you never proved that their purpose was to bring about a change in use. And the district court said, as a matter of law, their purpose was to drain the reservoir, make some inspections, and make some repairs. The most gross factual problem in this is the district court's repeated reference to the hatchery intake plumbing system. The defendants never claimed that was part of the dam. We were surprised to see that. Nobody ever claimed that was part of the dam. It's not.
There is a functional relationship between the two, is there not?
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. There's only a proximal relationship.
If you don't dam the water up, you're going to have anything for the pump to pump into the hatchery?
Defendants themselves refer to it as the river. If this is the reservoir, and I put the dam gates here, Your Honor, I can go over here and stick a pipe anywhere in this reservoir and pump water to cattle, pump water to fish. But the statute says dam, levees, all things that restrain and hold back water. It's very specific. This is just a water line with a box and a screen over it to keep debris out. In the supplemental appendix, which defendants provided with Mr. Clary's affidavit, there is a diagram of the hatchery property. And if one were to read Defendant Clary's affidavit and look at the exhibit at Supplemental Appendix 19, the diagram is there. It shows the Hatchery Administration Building. It shows the dam. The dam is the dam. The dam is not a reservoir. The dam is not a plumbing line 300 feet away that's used to let water drain out of the river or the reservoir, whichever you want to call it. You know, profoundly, the defendants never claimed that was part of the dam. The only two conceivable things left that the defendants claimed were in any way related to, quote, dam maintenance were, one, they claimed they wanted to inspect the lower gates. That's absurd. That had already been done. They knew they had to be repaired. Secondly, let's accept that. The undisputed record here in defendants' own brief, by 11 o'clock, the reservoir was completely drained to a channel. There were the gates. Let's look at them. A test drawdown. It was done at 11 o'clock, but they left the gates open for four more hours and dredged that.
We're going to leave some time for we're going to leave some time for
into your time. Now.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear now from Mr. Neil Lewis.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Neil Lewis. I also represent the plaintiffs. I'm going to address the 1983 claims, but I would also entertain any other questions that the court may have.
Do you want to follow up, counsel, on this argument about the that he was just making?
Yes, Your Honor. There would be no point to leave the dam open after 11 o'clock, because if their excuse for claiming to inspect the bottom of the dam gates was accurate, then they would have been able to then shut them at 11 o'clock, because that purpose would have been done instead of leaving it open for another 4 hours as the materials continue to dredge out of the reservoir.
The sediment came out last?
The sediment would have been coming out throughout the process, but there would have been 4 hours of sediment discharging from 11 o'clock on. There certainly would have been sediment discharging at the beginning of the process also. The evidence in the record is that the reservoir was completely full of sediment and that they'd wanted for years to be able to dredge it.
I understand there was a ditch at the bottom of this reservoir when it was cleared out. Is that correct?
Yes, it was. It literally cut a channel that...
Was there evidence it was that a channel was cut by the water passage at this particular time?
Yes, in fact, the defendants admitted that in their depositions, and that is in the record and in the briefs that they admitted to that. In our fact sections, those specific admissions are noted.
Is it clear that that process would have taken place sometime after 11 o'clock, or was
yes, Your Honor,
that happened throughout the emptying of the reservoir?
It would have, that process would have continued throughout from the beginning of the day through the end of the process. What causes the dredging is a rapid and man-induced acceleration of the water in a reservoir that's filled. If you think of it as a bowl filled with pudding, and you take a hose and you have calm water on the top, and then you take a hose and you blow across the top of that, material is going to come out with it. If you cut a hole in the bottom of the bowl, and it literally, the sediment and the pudding will literally drain out of it as a result of the hyper-induced flows. When you store water, you store energy. And it is a recognized mining engineering technique to, in fact, dredge reservoirs this way.
But isn't there at least a factual issue as to whether or not the force of the water was such here that you can really place this in the same category as that mining procedure, I believe it's called?
No, Your Honor, it's precisely the procedure that's employed in that kind of hydraulic dredging. It's exactly that, and again, we have affidavits from mining experts and engineers in the record to that effect, and there was no dispute by the DNR. In fact, the DNR engineers also testified to that and admitted that in depositions. There's no conflict in the record on that point.
Were the DNR engineers consulted in this?
That's kind of related to the red herring. We do not believe the district court intended to mislead anyone. I want to make that clear. I think it's confusing. They were intending to do, and we have a specific footnote on this in the facts section, they were intending to do these repairs to the dam at some later date. And what they did was to introduce into the record evidence of having consulted with their engineers about those repairs that were to take place at some later date.
Repairs are necessary now, but there's no money for it. Am I correct in that?
In fact, they have completed the repairs. There's nothing.
No, I'm talking about the time they did the repairs. They were necessary then, weren't they?
They didn't do any repairs on the date this happened, Your Honor.
Well, they were going to do repairs. That's why they did it. Am I correct?
Not to the dam, Your Honor. No, they had no intended repairs, and in fact,
there was authority to, I think, as Judge Bowers pointed out, there's authority to do the repairs at some point, not that day that the floodgates were open.
Correct, Judge Kane, yes. But there was no authority for them to do any dam repairs.
I'm sorry, let me follow
yes,
up.
Yes, Your Honor.
When they did the repairs, how did they accomplish the repairs?
Later on, they put a cofferdam in and never dropped the water. And in fact, that's the other part of this. It served no purpose to drain the reservoir to do any kind of repairs at any time. It's a simple matter to just wall off these dams and go ahead and do the repairs because you can wall it off and provide yourself with access to the gates, even if that truly were going to go on. And that's one of the points that we've consistently wanted to make, which is, I mean, you know, it's... apologize, but it's a little bit like the dog ate my homework. I mean, it's a very poor excuse for what they did. They did not need to do this. The DNR engineers came up with a number of different ways they could have undertaken these any claimed repairs, both if an inspection of the gates, work on the gates, which none was done that day and none was intended, they admit, but work on the plumbing. In fact, they did the plumbing later on without dropping the dam. There's no reason to do it. I mean, it's just... it's a little bit like you have.
It was one possible way, though, of obtaining access to that pipe that needed to be fixed, right?
It is one possible way of obtaining access to the plumbing. Yes, Your Honor.
Does the record really establish that it was an unreasonable way of doing it?
Yes, the DNR engineers admit to basically that in the record, in their depositions, that had they consulted with them, they would have never done this, and they would have told them not to do it.
Now, to what degree do we really need to look at matters of intent here? I mean, isn't this based, don't we basically under the statute just simply look at result?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Judge Bauer, I agree with that, and we again believe that was an essential mistake that the district court did. The district court injected, while it said, I recognize the standard of strict liability, the district court really injected a requirement of fault into the recapture provision, certainly, when it said, you know, there's no evidence they intended to damage the river and discharge its materials downstream, and that's simply irrelevant. Even though it cites a strict liability standard, the court is clearly imposing a standard that's not strict liability.
So your view is even if they were repairing, just wanted to repair this pipe, if they ended up at the end of the day with a lot of sludge out in that river, that's the end of it?
That is, Your Honor, because the exemption was never intended to provide an exception or immunity from liability where you have a disaster of this proportion. I mean, there's just no dispute in the record that what was once a beautiful, clean, you know, in Wisconsin it would be a trout stream. In Indiana we don't have waters that cold, but it was gorgeous. It was like Disneyland. It was so beautiful. And now it's literally filled with mud. It's a toilet. It's destroyed for all recreational uses. I mean, the changes are dramatic. And if you look at the pictures of Greenfield Mills before and after, I mean, my goodness, they literally filled a small lake 5 miles downstream. I mean, what a monumental...
Everybody talks about a small lake. How small was that lake?
That lake's probably about 20 acres.
Okay.
Yeah. They raised the level about 2 feet of sediments, which was enough to change it from an open surface water lake to a marsh.
Now you cut this chasm, if you want, in the reservoir.
Yes, Your Honor.
1 to 3 feet, as I recall in the record.
Actually, the IU report indicates having cut a channel of as much as 8 feet, but you also have to remember the record also indicates from the DNR engineers that the sides of this, if you take a bowl and you take a spatula and you run down the middle of it, the sides will be slumping. As the sides slump in, again, the force of the water discharging out of the dam carries that slumped material also. So the bowl literally slumps to the center and all the material ends up...
How important is it to your case that the bowl, that there were changes in the contour of the reservoir?
Well, I would start and end this analysis with the recapture provision, quite frankly. I just think it's absolutely clear that Congress never intended to allow these kind of destructive activities to take place. But the district court said under the one regulation says there can't be a change in the fill design. We won't allow an exemption for discharge of materials if there's a change in the fill design. The district court said fill design meant the amount of water in the reservoir. Well, we think that's wrong because fill is specifically defined under the Act as materials that change the elevation. So the court got that wrong. I mean, there clearly was a change in the amount of fill in the river as originally placed because they moved it from one part in the reservoir and then discharged it in the river and literally kind of filled the backside of the dam for 5 miles. But even if the court was right, they deepened the reservoir by quite a bit. I mean, if the court was right that it's the amount of wet water in the reservoir, the record is undisputed that there was, in fact, that change.
I think we have your point, sir, and your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate the opportunity this morning, Your Honor.
We'll hear next from Ms. McDonald.
Thank you. May it please the court. This case is about whether or not permits were needed under Sections 404 and 402 of the Clean Water Act for the actions taken by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources on May 18th of 1998. Any sediment or silt that was allegedly passed through the dam structure that day is irrelevant for the purposes of the Clean Water Act. The
allegedly passed?
The amount is disputed in the facts, Your Honor. The facts raised by the appellants are simply...
How much do you say was...
Well, Your Honor, our expert report was never put into evidence. The district court ruled before our report was put into evidence. But our amounts are...
So the only amount in evidence is what the plaintiff submitted?
Correct, Your Honor.
So it's really not in dispute, then?
In the facts, you're correct. It's not disputed in the facts.
Why was didn't your report make it?
Several reasons, Your Honor. First and foremost, the contracting provisions in the state of Indiana are very lengthy, and we were tied up in that process. and then our experts took a lot longer than we anticipated in putting together their expert report. And by the time they had it put together, Judge Lee had already rendered his decision in this case.
But your position is it doesn't make any difference?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't.
Good. I mean, at least I know your position.
The facts are immaterial because the core issue is whether or not a permit was required, which is a question of law, not a question of fact. The district court was correct in holding that no 404 permit was required because clearly the maintenance exclusion applies under Section 404F1 and no recapture occurred under Section 404F2. Here, the maintenance exclusion clearly applies because the actions taken by the defendants on that day were both for a maintenance inspection of the dam structure itself and for repairs on the plumbing intake structure. The problems were well documented in advance. The dam problems had been documented since 1996, and the problems with the plumbing had been documented in early of 1998. The DNR employees both consulted with other parties within the agency and without on how to make the repairs to both the dam itself and to the plumbing, and they had drafted project and budget proposals that were submitted to their superiors within DNR.
But there was no plan to actually repair the dam, was there?
On
that particular day?
No, there was not, Your Honor. The repairs needed to be made to the plumbing structure. Because it was getting time for stocking season and they needed to make sure that their rearing ponds had enough water in them. And without that plumbing intake structure, they could not fill their rearing ponds.
With respect to the maintenance provision, it talks about the character, the scope, or the size.
Yes,
the original fill design.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand your brief, you think that language in this particular case pertains to the reservoir, am I correct?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Now, but isn't there at least a disputed question of fact as to whether or not there was a change to the size of that reservoir as a result of this process?
I don't think there is, Your Honor. The size of the reservoir is approximately 1.8 acres in size. Regardless of whether there was a drainage ditch, we do not feel that changed the overall size of the structure.
Well, if you dig a hole a little bit deeper in the reservoir, you're going to hold more water the next time, right?
Well, that's true, unless that hole that you have dug fills itself back up. Then the original fill design was never changed.
But that was going to take an awful long time for that to fill back up, wouldn't it?
Well, it would depend. I don't think we ever reached that issue.
That reservoir and the fish hatchery been there?
I'm not sure in the exact number of years, but I know it's been many, and I believe since the early 1900s, I believe.
How often do they repair the plumbing?
I don't have any exact numbers, Your Honor.
When was the last time they repaired the plumbing?
I'm not aware of any time that they repaired the plumbing. They attempted to repair the plumbing, a different portion of that same plumbing valve, several weeks before. They replaced the screen on top to see if that would take care of the problem, and it did not. And that's why they drained it on the 18th of May of 1998.
Now, I understand with respect to the language of that maintenance provision, you and your colleagues on the other side disagree as to exactly what the wording original fill design pertains to, am I correct? What is the best authority for your view that this pertains to the dam and the pump? Is that your view?
Yes, I think it would be the case as cited in our brief. If you look at the plaintiff's interpretation of fill design, if you interpret their definition of that, they say any discharge then that goes past the dam would have been a violation of that. Well, if that's the case, you would never be able to fall under the maintenance exclusion because any discharge that went past the dam would always be a violation. It just doesn't make sense. In this case, also, the district court was correct in holding that the recapture provision was avoided.
Well, before you get to that, under the maintenance exception itself, do you have to have chosen a reasonable approach to the repair in order for that maintenance provision to be available to you?
No, Your Honor, I don't think you do. I don't think the statute requires that you choose a reasonable approach. As long as your purpose is maintenance, I think that under the statute you would fall under that.
Is that a subjective or an objective test, whether or not it involved maintenance?
Your Honor, I believe it would be a subjective test.
Is there any authority for that?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
We have a lot of questions, don't we, in this case, where there's either no authority or where the authority is thin.
Correct.
Was there any discussion in the district court of asking the United States to file a brief in this case, given the position of the EPA with respect to these matters of statutory definition that
no, there was not,
divides you and your colleagues?
No, there was not, Your Honor.
Is that a good idea?
I don't know if it is a good idea. While on one hand I agree with you that some of the areas, it's hard to tell exactly what the authority is, I think the EPA is pretty clear when they have their position that says that if you fall under this maintenance exclusion, which you can read the statute literally and determine what is maintenance, and when you avoid the recapture provision, that you have not violated the Clean Water Act.
When you get down to it, there aren't very many Court of Appeals cases interpreting these provisions, are there?
Pardon me?
There are not a lot of Court of Appeals provisions interpreting cases interpreting these provisions, are there?
Not the maintenance provision, no. The recapture provision, I believe there's more authority.
Now, if I understand it again, there was no scheduled maintenance the day that they opened those floodgates?
No, there was no scheduled maintenance to the dam, the structure itself. There was going to be maintenance in the future. However, when the plumbing intake needed to be repaired and they realized that the easiest and safest way to do that was by draining the reservoir, they said, well, then we can also do our dam and maintenance inspection that they would use for a future date. And dam maintenance inspection does fall under the maintenance exclusion. The only discharge here was incidental to maintenance of the dam, which did not have as its purpose the change in use. When you read the statute, as the district court did, if the purpose is not a change in use, one need not go any further. The portion of
are
the
you talking about
the recapture provision.
Do we look at subjective intent there, or just do we look at result, though?
You don't have to look at intent. I think the issue is you first look at the statute, and if the purpose is a change in use, then yes, you need to go further, and you need to look, was there a change in flow or circulation? But that portion of the statute is simply a modifier for the first portion, which talks about change in use. Here, there was not an intent to change the use of the river, of the dam. There was simply the purpose of dam maintenance. So we never need to get to that second portion of the statute. And I think the district court was correct when they interpreted the statute that way.
So if inspection in anticipation of maintenance and you create just devastation, doesn't really... That's not excluded.
Well, as long as you fall within the maintenance exclusion and avoid the recapture provision, you haven't violated the Clean Water Act.
So no matter what happens to the stream, it's...
Essentially, no.
Good luck.
Essentially, that's correct. As long as you have met the requirements of the Clean Water Act.
That'd be a pretty,
in this case, we did.
That would be a pretty powerful statement by this court if we said that, wouldn't it? I mean, we have a... arguable tragedy here, but we can think of some situations where your view of the law would create an awful lot of damage downstream.
That could potentially be the case, Your Honor.
And you think that's just the way Congress wrote the statute?
At this point in time, I do believe so, because if you fall within the maintenance exclusion and if you avoid that recapture provision, then you haven't violated
the Clean Water Act. If there had been double the amount of silt in this case downstream, that would have made no difference.
No, it would not have. It's immaterial.
Simply because of the purpose was to fix that hole, to fix that pipe.
And to do the dam maintenance inspection, correct. And therefore, we fell within the maintenance exclusion, avoided recapture, and we did not violate, the DNR did not violate the Clean Water Act.
Was there any issue of pretext raised with regard to the plumbing?
No, there was not. There was no issue. And I don't think that's an issue here. I don't think there is ever a time where you raise the issue of pretext in a case like this.
If that was the intent, was not neither maintenance or repair, and for whatever reason the floodgates were opened, and then you insert that could be an issue of pretext.
It could be an issue, but I think here the facts are clear that the purpose was a maintenance inspection and was repair on the dam structure, on the plumbing structure. So we clearly fell within the maintenance exclusion, and I don't know then at that point if the plaintiffs can...
What was the testimony from your engineers with regard to the fact that they wouldn't have proceeded that way?
Well, when the proposal was originally given to the other divisions of DNR that would need to be involved, they came up with several options, one of which was to put the coffer dam in, which plaintiff's counsel talked about that they eventually did do to repair the dam gates. However, one of the options was to just raise the dam gate. And the reason that that option was eventually was chosen is it's a lot cheaper, and the defendants did not feel that the amount of sediment that plaintiffs are claiming was released would be released, and that's why they chose that option.
I'm sorry, say that again. That they didn't anticipate that much sediment to be released?
They dispute that was much was released, and that with only draining that small 1-acre supply pond, they did not think that any damage would be caused to the river by raising the dam gates, which was the cheapest and most affordable option to
the state. And in your view, the fact that they were wrong makes no difference.
Correct. I don't think they were wrong, but I do not.
There's an issue of fact as to how much of this stuff got downstream.
Yes, although that issue of fact doesn't matter here. The core issue is whether or not the Clean Water Act was violated, and that's a question of law. It's not a question of fact. If I may move on to the 402 issue, there was no...
pretext might be a question.
Pardon me?
Pretext might bring some factual questions in, might it not?
In what way, Your Honor, if I may ask? I guess I'm a little confused by the question.
Well, let me repeat my question.
Okay.
Pretext may come into play, and that may bring in factual issues, right?
I think the only way that would come into play if it was determined that the maintenance exclusion does not apply and that we did not avoid recapture. Then
right.
I think pretext would come into play. You're
right.
Correct.
Isn't that what they allege?
In a roundabout way, I believe they do, but they never specifically...
Will that become an issue in this case, then?
I don't think it does. I think the facts are clear that the maintenance exclusion applied, the purpose was for maintenance, and therefore we also avoided the recapture provision.
Where's this plumbing that you're talking about that you don't know if it's been repaired before and how they've done it before, I assume?
It's the plumbing structure was within the 1-acre supply pond, which is the waters retained by the dam. It's within those waters.
Nothing in the record shows when the last time they repaired it?
No, there's nothing in the record that shows that, Your Honor. I believe there's some documents in the record that show there were how they eventually did repair it. We stated, and I think the parties agreed, that not all of the repairs were conducted while the reservoir was drained, that some of those repairs
but
were
their,
conducted.
Their allegation is that a matter that apparently, given the factual situation, that's really not a part of the dam.
It's not a part of the dam itself, Your Honor, but the...
Well, is that repair to that plumbing covered by this statute?
No, but the dam maintenance inspection is covered by the statute, and the purpose of raising that dam gate...
So it didn't make any difference about the plumbing?
Essentially, no. But the reason they drained it was to get to the plumbing and to do the dam maintenance inspection, so it was a twofold purpose that day.
Well, what if they really didn't do it they wanted to fix the plumbing and thought that'd be an easy way? Instead of the...
Well, that is the best way to fix the plumbing.
Then
and we stipulated
that.
Then,
right?
Pardon me?
That then had nothing to do with the dam if your pretext issue concerns the inspection of those I-beams, but your real purpose was to repair the plumbing.
If that was the case, that would be true. But in this case, the record's clear that dam maintenance inspection was a purpose that day. It was one of the two purposes of raising
those dams. And there's no dispute in the record that was the purpose, that you had scheduled that for maintenance inspection on that day.
Pardon me?
That you had scheduled it for maintenance inspection on that day.
No, there's no documents that show it was scheduled to have maintenance that day, but the defendants figured that as long as they were going to have to raise the dam gate, they could do both projects at one time, and therefore they didn't only have to raise the dam gate one time. The dam structure... It was before it was repaired, subsequent to this case, was very old and very hard to raise that lower gate. And so they thought it'd be easier if they did both activities at once, and therefore they only had to raise the gate once.
So they never intended to repair the gate at the same time?
No, the repairs to the dam were going to be...
How do we know that?
Well, it's in the record that the
well, that's what I'm saying. How do we know that?
The defendants clearly said that they didn't intend to actually repair the dam structure. They only wanted to inspect it. It was very hard to see exactly.
Is there any record to indicate, that was my question, that that's what was scheduled, just the observation of the gate? Correct?
Just in the defendant's testimony in their depositions, it's clear that they intended to do a dam maintenance inspection to find out the extent of the repairs that would be necessary.
And they'd consulted engineers concerning the inspection?
Not concerning the inspection, no. Just concerning the repairs that were to be done at a later date. But those repairs could have changed depending on the inspection. I mean, I'm sure everyone's familiar with water. You can't see very far to the bottom sometimes.
Apparently not in this one, anyway.
Well, even before it was drained, it wasn't the clearest water. And you couldn't see to the bottom of the I-beams that needed to be repaired. So DNR needed to drain the reservoir and inspect those I-beams to see how far down the damage went and to see if there was any damage to the gates, which at that time were wooden gates. The district court was correct in holding that no discharge of a pollutant occurred by these actions as well, and therefore no 402 permit was required. The Appalachian Power case and the Gorsuch case...
Say that again.
The district court was clear that there was no discharge of a pollutant by these actions, and therefore no 402 permit was required, an MPDES
pollutant
permit.
Pollutant as described in the statute.
Correct. The Appalachian Power Company case and the Gorsuch case are clear that constituents occurring naturally occurring in waterways do not constitute the addition of a pollutant.
Was there any chemical added to that to kill off growth?
There was chemical added in 93 or 94, and that was in a separate, what's referred to as Mill Dam Lake. You have Mill Dam Lake, you have a small channel, there's a small rock dam, and then you have a small channel till you get to the 1-point-acre impoundment. The 1-point-acre impoundment was the only thing that was drained that day. And so not only was the sediment that would have been in Mill Dam Lake not an issue, but the vegetation that was killed by those pesticides and things of that nature that were applied would not have traveled that far.
In your view, what does constitute dredged spoil then for purposes of Section 402?
In certain instances, sediment, silt, dirt, things of that nature can be dredged spoil.
Why not here?
Well, because I think the Appalachian Power case and the Gorsuch case are clear. They state that constituents occurring naturally in waterways are not always considered an addition of a pollutant and that all dam discharges are not to be regulated. The cases that appellants rely on can clearly be distinguished. All of the cases they rely on involve excavation and active removal, which is exactly what the district court said. When you have the excavation and active removal of this sediment and dirt or whatever you're moving, that would constitute a pollutant.
And your colleagues, their view is that the way this was done created so much force in the water that had been stored in the reservoir that it, in effect, scooped out a great deal of sediment and dirt from the bottom of this reservoir and sent it rushing downstream. Isn't that an excavation for purposes of the statute?
According to the district court, yes, it could be. But the district court also said even if that was considered dredging, it's not a discharge of a pollutant. Those sediments were already there. They were not actively removed by DNR and by the defendants, and therefore it was not a discharge of a pollutant. The cases that appellants rely on, one of them involves surface mining.
Is there any question of fact on that issue?
No, I don't believe there is. I don't believe there is, because like the district...
They never intended for that sediment to leave?
Well, I guess, on one hand, yes, there would be... Obviously, you know that some sediment is going to go past the dam. That was never an issue. The question was how much. But once again, we don't need to get to the question of how much because we didn't violate the Clean Water Act.
Unless they intended to remove the sediment.
That's correct, but that was not their intent. And the record is clear from the testimony of the DNR.
Is it a matter of intent or a matter of result? I mean, suppose these guys just didn't figure it out and, whoops, by the end of the day, we've got an awful lot of sediment downstream.
Well, even if that is the case, it's still not a violation of the Clean Water Act.
Why?
Because it goes back to the purpose was maintenance and the recapture provision was avoided. It all goes back to that. So whether they intended to or not is not an issue. And the intent number never comes into play unless you're talking about strict liability, which never comes into play unless there's a violation of the Clean Water Act.
Unless, in fact, you really just intended to fix the pipes and not the floodgate.
If that was the case, you're correct, but that was not the case here. I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. McDowell. Mr. Lewis has no time. We'll give you at least a minute if you have anything that you'd like to say, Mr. Lewis. I think we gave you a good amount of time before. I think we'd better keep it at a minute, sir. Okay, we'll keep it at a minute.
Quickly, Your Honor, the district court did not rule that there was no discharge of a pollutant under Section 402. That's simply inaccurate. The district court ruled there was a discharge and an addition of a pollutant under Section 402. That's just an inaccurate reference to the district court opinion.
And how did the district court think that was excused then?
The district court, we say, erroneously went on and said since it wasn't done intentionally, it wasn't a 402 violation. We say that just came out of thin air because it is a strict liability statute.
So that's a difference in the interpretation of the statute between you and your colleague.
Between us and our colleague in the district court, yes, Your Honor. On the recapture provision, if I may once more, even using the district court's reasoning that we have to prove a subjective purpose to bring about a change in use, the language is any discharge of dredge or fill material incidental to any activity having as its purpose bringing an area of the navigable waters into a use to which it was not previously subject. And we said, even taking that, we proved two purposes to change use. One, there's not a single piece of evidence in this record this reservoir had ever been drained before. The statute doesn't require it be permanent. They fully intended to do it. That's a change in use of a water body. End of case. Second, there's no evidence at all in this record that the Fawn River had ever been used as the receptacle for the entire stored waters of the Orland Reservoir. Not a single piece of evidence. First time in history as far as this record is concerned. That is a change in use.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.